Chapter 7 Superhero Being Extraordinary in an Ordinary World. Warning: This chapter contains spoilers for the following books: The White Queen by Philippa Gregory, Cinder by Marissa Meyer, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling. In every era of human history, in every culture, in every mythology, there can be found a story of a chosen one. This is an individual who is, in some way, superior to the rest of us, whose job and destiny it is to rise up, overcome great obstacles, defeat the greatest evil, and maybe even save the world. From Jesus to the Buddha to Hercules to Harry Potter, these are the heroes who are the least like the rest of us, but who still inspire us to become better versions of ourselves. The stories that fall into the save-the-cat genre called superhero are about an extraordinary person who finds themselves in an ordinary world, among us mortals. Now, before your mind starts to wander to men and women in capes and tights, let me just say that superhero stories are not just about comic book superheroes, although those are certainly in there as well. This genre embraces any hero who finds themselves destined for greatness, whether they like it or not. But it's not easy being special, as all the great superhero novels show us. Being different and bestowed with greatness often comes with a price. And that price is usually some variation of being misunderstood by the rest of the world. Because let's face it, we don't always revere those who are different. And that is what makes this genre relatable. Even if we ourselves haven't been endowed with magical powers, special abilities, an unrivaled mind, steadfast ambition, or even an unwavering faith in a certain mission or destiny, we've all experienced the curse of being different, feeling different, or being misunderstood. The superheroes of this genre come in all shapes and sizes, and with all different kinds of abilities. From the real-life superheroes of history, like Elizabeth of York, in Philippa Gregory's massively successful historical fiction novel, The White Queen, to the magically inclined superheroes of fantasy novels, like the Harry Potter series by J.K. Rowling, and the Percy Jackson series by Rick Riordan, to the heroes who, by their very nature, break the accepted mold of society, as in the Divergent series by Veronica Roth, or even beloved children's novels like Matilda by Roald Dahl. All of these stories are essentially the same. They all tell the tale of a chosen one who is misunderstood by the rest of society, gets very little respect, at least at first, and ultimately is different from the rest of us. That's why most superhero stories are stories of triumph and sacrifice. These are characters destined for greatness, but greatness isn't always easy to achieve. These heroes must rise up and face great challenges and obstacles in order to fulfill their destinies. That is, after all, what makes them super. How many of us would simply give up when faced with those same odds? But not these heroes. On some level, they know in their hearts and souls that this is their path, and they will not stray. Our three ingredients for mastering this genre are: 1, a hero with a special power. 2, a nemesis who stands opposed to our hero. And 3, a curse that our hero must suffer as the price for their greatness. Now, don't be fooled by the word power. Not all superheroes are magically inclined. A superhero's power can simply be a mission to do good or be great, or possibly even an undying faith in a cause. It's either magic or feels like magic because the hero's faith and/or embedded destiny are so unnaturally strong. Triss, the hero of Divergent, for example, has no magic to speak of. But her very nature of being Divergent, fitting between the established factions of society, makes her special, and therefore a danger to the status quo. And Day, one of the two superheroes in Legend by Marie Lu, is super in his ability to consistently evade the authorities, steal from the Republic, and generally make the government look foolish in their failed attempts to apprehend him. On the other hand, you have heroes like Harry Potter, who are endowed with actual magic. But note, Harry's power is not that he has magic. Everyone in his world has magic. Rather, it's that he's the chosen one to defeat Voldemort, because he's the only one so far who has faced Voldemort and lived to tell about it. Regardless of your hero's mission or ability, this power is the thing that makes the hero more than human, more than the rest of us. But with great power come great enemies. Enter the nemesis. This is the character directly opposing the hero. They have abilities that match the hero's, or sometimes even greater abilities. But the big difference is that their abilities are self-made. The nemesis lacks the one quality that makes for every great superhero: faith. The superhero doesn't have to wonder if they are special. They know it. Maybe not at first, but eventually. The nemesis, on the other hand, has to rely on themselves, their plots, and whoever else they've manipulated to their side. They must build a facade of being special and do whatever it takes to keep that facade from falling. Because the nemesis secretly knows, whether they accept it or not, that they are the false hero. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to try so dang hard. Think about Lord Voldemort in Harry Potter, and how much work he has to put in to be the evil villain that he is. Creating Horcruxes, recruiting wizards, mastering dark magic. Man, that guy must be tired. Harry, on the other hand, doesn't really have to try to be special. He just is, because he's the true chosen one. It's been his destiny since he was a baby. Does he always want that? No way. But that's the burden you bear when you're a superhero. And what about Lord Warwick in The White Queen, or Queen Lyanna in Cinder by Marissa Meyer? Those two nemeses are doing everything in their power to keep the world from realizing who the true superhero is. Fighting battles, sending in armies, brainwashing, and strategizing political marriages, it's a lot of work keeping up a facade of superiority. It's that lack of faith in the mind of the nemesis that drives their need to kill the hero. This is what will prove to themselves and the world that the nemesis is the chosen one. Once Harry Potter is dead, Voldemort can stop trying. Once Cinder is dealt with, Queen Lyanna will stand undisputed. Once Queen Elizabeth of York is knocked off her throne, Lord Warwick can finally rule the kingdom the way he wants to. And there, in that very rationality, lies the nemesis's problem. If they really were the rightful chosen one, they wouldn't need to kill or prove it. The world would already know, just as they usually know with the superhero. I must note, superheroes don't always survive the story. There's usually an ultimate showdown at the end of each superhero novel or series, in which the superhero and the nemesis finally have it out, mano a mano. And often, particularly when it comes to real-life superhero stories, the hero is destroyed. But that doesn't really matter, because we, the mortals, the readers, we have been changed by the journey. We have been touched by the universal lesson that the hero ultimately learned. We believe. And that is what makes the hero victorious and immortal. Finally, the third ingredient of every great superhero story is a curse. And it might be the most important ingredient of all, because the curse is what balances out the superhero's power, so we don't completely despise the novel's protagonist. Matilda would not have been as successful as a character had she not been born into a family of dimwits, constantly being picked on and ridiculed by her short-sighted parents and brother. Imagine if she had started out at the top of her game, living with a family who adored and worshipped her for the genius that she is. Yeah, kinda hard to get behind that, Matilda. Most likely, we'd just end up wrinkling our noses at her, because doesn't she think she's all that? Taking our heroes down a peg, giving them a handicap, so to speak, especially at the beginning of the novel or series, is what makes these stories work. Remember, after all, the hero isn't like you or me, so it's naturally going to be harder for us to relate to them. That's why we must show the downside of being special, the curse. It turns out being special is not always all it's cracked up to be. It comes with its fair share of headaches and problems. The curse is usually some variation of being misunderstood. We mere mortals have a hard time accepting those who are inherently different from and better than us. Cinder is a cyborg, and clever Marissa Meyer created a world in which cyborgs are considered inferior to the rest of society. Percy Jackson has been kicked out of every boarding school he's ever attended. Day in Marie Lou's Legend is a wanted criminal being hunted down by the Republic. This is storytelling manipulation at its finest. All the greats have done it, and you have to do it too. Getting the reader on your superhero's side is a constant balancing act. We can't pity them to the point where we just give up. And we can't dislike them to the point where we roll our eyes, shut the book, and go searching for something we can relate to. In the end, most of us will never truly understand what it's like to be a superhero. But we can understand what it's like to be singled out, ridiculed, and misunderstood. It's a curse that all human beings must overcome at some point in their lives. So make sure your superhero has to overcome it too. In addition to these three essential ingredients of a superhero story, there are also some other popular components that we often see in these types of novels. First, a common beat that many superhero novels contain, usually found in Act 2, is a name change. This is either for the superhero to disguise themselves or to fit in as they assume their new role in the Act 2 world. Elizabeth Woodville becomes Queen Elizabeth in The White Queen. Beatrice becomes Triss in Divergent. And June, a prodigy and the other superhero character in Legend, goes undercover in Act 2, dressed as a street beggar. There's also a character type we see often in superhero stories called the mascot. The mascot is usually a companion or sidekick to the hero, someone or something that is always loyal to the superhero, despite the turmoil going on around them. In the Harry Potter series, it's Harry's owl, Hedwig. In Cinder, it's her quirky android, Iko. In The White Queen, it's Elizabeth's mother, Jaquetta. In Legend, it's Tess for Day and Ollie the dog for June. These characters are not normally super themselves, not destined for the same exalted fate, but instead serve to show us just how different the superhero really is from the rest of us. Because these are the characters who have understood the superhero's greatness from the very start. The superhero genre is definitely popular among readers and moviegoers, but nowhere will you find it more prevalent than among books for teens and tweens. Just look at the list of superhero novels in the PDF and count how many of them are best-selling young adult and children's books. Many of us have fantasies of being special, rising up and proving we are better than our peers, better than those who put us down. But at no time in our lives is this feeling more intoxicating than during our adolescent years. These are the years when we're figuring out who we are, what we're made of, how we can stand up without standing out too much. Which is why the lesson of the superhero story resonates so well with us during this tumultuous time in our lives. See, even superheroes have problems, and those problems aren't much different from yours. To recap, if you're thinking of writing a superhero novel, make sure your story includes these three essential ingredients. A power, bestowed on your hero even if it's just a mission to be or do good. A nemesis, who directly opposes your hero and who possesses equal or even greater force, but who is the self-made version of the hero and lacks the faith to truly be the one. A curse, for the hero to overcome or succumb to as the price for who they are, and which makes your hero relatable to us mere mortals. Popular superhero novels through time include Dracula by Bram Stoker, Dune by Frank Herbert, Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler, Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi. For a complete list, please reference the bonus PDF that came with this audiobook. Here is the beat sheet for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling. Save the cat genre, superhero. Book genre, children's fiction, fantasy. Total pages, 309. Scholastic U.S. paperback, 1997. Spawning a box office record-breaking film franchise, a stage play, merchandise, and even multiple theme parks, this first installment in the epic fantasy series by J.K. Rowling truly needs no introduction. But it's worth mentioning that it has one of the more perfect novel beat sheets I've found out there. Coincidence? I think not. Brilliant creativity, flawless world-building, memorable characters, and a rock-solid story structure clearly contribute to this novel's astounding success. Harry's struggle throughout the series to come to terms with the fact that he is the chosen one to defeat Voldemort, a power and a curse in one, makes this novel a winning example of a superhero story. 1. Opening image, pages 1 through 17. A magical community is celebrating the retreat of the evil wizard, Voldemort. One boy has shockingly survived the battle. His name is Harry Potter. He is still a baby, and the encounter with Voldemort has left him with a lightning bolt-shaped scar on his forehead. A mysterious wizard named Dumbledore drops baby Harry off on the doorstep of No. 4 Privet Drive, the home of Harry's aunt and uncle, the Dursleys. In this chapter, we're introduced to J.K. Rowling's famous world of magic. We already start getting hints of what that world is like and who the key players are, but we won't truly come to understand it until Harry the baby is all grown up and presented with his destiny. 2. Theme stated, page 13. On page 13, Dumbledore says to Professor McGonagall, who has just morphed from a black cat. Famous before he can walk and talk. Famous for something he won't remember. Can't you see how much better off he'll be, growing up away from all that until he's ready to take it? Like so many superhero stories, this first installment in the Harry Potter series is about a hero who discovers how special they really are and has to learn to live with it. As the boy who lived, Harry is marked as a chosen one, and this story at its core is about him coming to terms with that. 3. Setup, pages 18 to 45. We fast forward 10 years. Harry is now 11. He has a miserable life at the Dursleys, with lots of things that need fixing. He has to sleep in a cupboard under the stairs. He's an orphan who knows very little about his real parents and never feels like he belongs. And the Dursleys treat him horribly. The stasis equals death in this novel is clear. If Harry's life doesn't improve, he's going to wither away. The problem is, Harry has no idea that he's special, or that he's even magical. Strange things do tend to happen when he's around, though. Like when Harry accidentally makes the glass in a snake cage vanish during a trip to the zoo, releasing the animal from its captivity. 4. Catalyst, pages 45 to 60. Harry's Act 1 world is interrupted by the arrival of a mysterious letter in the post. Harry never gets mail. His Uncle Vernon won't let him open it and burns the letter before Harry can read it. Then another letter arrives, and another. Soon the house is inundated with mysterious letters addressed to Harry Potter. The Dursleys try to escape the post by hiding in an isolated shack. That's when a loud knock comes at the door, and a giant named Hagrid arrives to tell Harry that he's a wizard and he's been accepted to a wizarding school called Hogwarts. Talk about a break in the status quo. Harry also learns how his parents really died, at the hands of he who must not be named, and about how he got the scar on his forehead. Hagrid wants to take Harry with him. The Dursleys protest. Who do you think wins that argument? Uncle Vernon or the giant? Exactly. 5. Debate. Pages 60 through 87. The next morning, Harry wakes up, thinking this has all been a dream, until he realizes he's still with the magical giant. The rest of this novel's debate is a transition from muggle life to wizard life. Harry has to get ready for school and get ready for everything that goes with that. Hagrid takes him to Diagon Alley, one of our first introductions to the wizarding world and its secret geography amidst the city of London. Harry's transition includes physical preparations, buying spellbooks, cauldrons, robes, and so on, as well as mental preparations, learning about his past, his fame, and his importance in the wizarding world. Harry has never felt like he fit in before. Will he finally fit in here? And can he ever live up to this epic reputation as the boy who lived? 6. Break into 2. Pages 88 to 112. The break from Act 1 to Act 2 is very clear-cut and well-defined. When Harry boards the train for Hogwarts, he's proactively leaving one world, the Muggle world, behind, and decisively stepping into another, the upside-down wizarding world. He's got the clothes, he's got the gear, he's even got the owl, Harry's mascot character. The preparations are over. There's no mistaking it. Harry is a wizard now. 7. B Story. Pages 90 to 106. On the train, Harry meets the two people who will become his best friends, his helpers, and his confidants. Ron and Hermione are the twin B-story characters of the novel. They will both help Harry learn the theme of accepting his true destiny as the boy who lived, and all the responsibility that comes with that. 8. Fun and Games. Pages 113 to 179. Everything about this novel's package, the cover, the description, the hook, promises us, the reader, the ultimate premise. A school for witches and wizards. Cool. And boy, does Rowling deliver on that promise. As soon as Harry boards that train, he's in a whole other world, and it's a fun one. There's a hat that sorts you into houses, staircases that move, classes called Defense Against the Dark Arts, potions, and charms, flying lessons, a whole new sport, Quidditch, and even fun magic candy. This whole world is completely different from the one Harry knows. He's no longer a nobody who is ignored. Now he is famous and has friends. But it doesn't take long to discover that Harry has enemies too. An instant rivalry sparks between Harry and Draco Malfoy in Slytherin House. Also, Harry is extremely suspicious of a mean professor named Snape, who seems to have it in for Harry. But despite his enemies, Harry's fun and games is definitely an upward path. He's loving his new world, and it seems as though Harry has finally found a place where he fits in. Plus, Harry makes the Quidditch team, a huge accomplishment for a first-year student. 9. Midpoint. Pages 180 to 191. Harry's first Quidditch match is his first public outing as his new self. He is now fully ensconced in this new world, and everyone in the stands can see it. His team wins the match, despite Harry's difficulties controlling his broom, and Harry is celebrated as a hero. At this point, Harry believes he's found everything he wants. A place to belong, something he can excel at, and friends. But it's a false victory. The stakes are raised shortly after when Hermione announces that she believes it was Professor Snape who cursed Harry's broom during the match. It's no longer fun and games. Something bigger is going on at Hogwarts, and Harry and his friends are determined to get to the bottom of it. 10. Bad guys close in. Pages 191 to 261. During tea, Hagrid accidentally slips up and tells Harry, Ron, and Hermione about someone named Nicholas Flamel, who has something to do with a three-headed dog that the kids recently bumped into. They know the three-headed dog is guarding something, but what? The plot thickens. At Christmas, Harry receives a gift from an anonymous stranger, an invisibility cloak that used to belong to his father. Soon after, Harry finds the Mirror of Erised, a looking glass that reveals your deepest desire. When Harry looks into the mirror, he sees his parents and feels lonely despite having found his place at Hogwarts. He starts to have nightmares about his parents dying, internal bad guys. Later, Harry, Hermione, and Ron learn that Nicholas Flamel is the inventor of the Sorcerer's Stone, which has the power to make someone immortal. They rationalize that this must be what the three-headed dog is guarding. Meanwhile, the external bad guys close in when Harry suspects Snape of working for Voldemort, and Harry and his friends are caught sneaking around the castle after hours and get put in detention. During detention, served with Hagrid in the Forbidden Forest, Harry finds a wounded unicorn and a sinister hooded figure who has been drinking the unicorn's blood. The scar on Harry's forehead starts to burn. Harry is certain the hooded figure was Voldemort, who had been drinking the unicorn blood to stay alive long enough to get to the Sorcerer's Stone. 11. All is lost. Pages 261 to 266. Thanks to another slip-up by Hagrid, Harry, Ron, and Hermione discover that Voldemort and Snape now know how to get past the three-headed dog guarding the Sorcerer's Stone. If nothing is done, Voldemort will soon have his hands on the stone and will become immortal. A reverse whiff of death. 12. Dark Night of the Soul. Pages 266 to 269. What are they going to do? Harry, Ron, and Hermione know they can't let Voldemort get his hands on the stone. Suspecting Snape is behind all of this, the kids go to tell Dumbledore, but the headmaster has left the school on business. And when they try to tell Professor McGonagall that the stone is in jeopardy, she dismisses them, avowing that the stone is safe. 13. Break into Three. Pages 269 to 271. They are left with no other choice. They have to go after the stone themselves. Harry, Ron, and Hermione make a plan to sneak out of their house after hours and try to stop Professor Snape from getting the stone for Voldemort. 14. Finale. Pages 271 to 309. Point 1. Gathering the team. In preparation of storming a real castle, the Hogwarts castle, Harry, Ron, and Hermione meet in the common room after everyone has gone to sleep. They have to get past Peeves, the poltergeist, and Neville Longbottom, who tries to stop them from sneaking out and getting the house in trouble. Point 2. Executing the plan. The kids reach the third floor corridor to find the three-headed dog has already been lulled to sleep and the trap door is open, which means Snape has already been there and they might be too late. The kids head down the trap door after him, encountering Devil's Snare, Wizard's Chess, and a potion test. With each challenge, a member of Harry's team makes a B-story sacrifice. Ron with the Wizard's Chess and Hermione with the potion, so that Harry, the hero, can get to the end and face whatever is waiting there, alone. Point 3. High Tower Surprise. Expecting to find Professor Snape in the final room, Harry is shocked to find another professor, Professor Quirrell, whom no one suspected. It turns out he is the one working for Voldemort and plotting to get the stone. Quirrell binds Harry with magic rope, and Harry has no idea what to do. How will he defend himself against Quirrell? Point 4. Dig deep down. The mirror of Erised is in the room, and Quirrell makes him look in it, hoping Harry will help him find the stone. This time, when Harry looks into the mirror, he sees himself hiding the stone in his own pocket. He lies and tells Quirrell that all he sees is his own success at school. A creepy voice calls Harry a liar and asks to speak to Harry directly. That's when Quirrell unravels the turban on his head and reveals that Voldemort is part of Quirrell. They have been sharing a body. When Quirrell Voldemort reaches for Harry and touches him, Harry's scar burns in pain, but Voldemort also cries out. That's when Harry realizes what's going on. As the boy who lived, he already has the ability to defend himself against Voldemort, right inside of him. Point 5. The execution of the new plan. Voldemort commands Quirrell to kill Harry, but Harry, now understanding his own power, reaches out and grabs Quirrell's face, which causes blinding pain to shoot through Harry's body. He passes out and wakes up in the school's infirmary. Dumbledore tells him that Quirrell is dead, Voldemort's location is unknown, but he'll surely be back, and the stone has been destroyed. When Harry asks how he was able to get the stone in the first place, Dumbledore explains that he spelled the stone so that only the one who wanted it for selfless purposes could find it. He also explains that Harry was able to protect himself against Voldemort because of the love his mother gave to him when she died for him. Voldemort couldn't penetrate that. Later, after Harry is released from the infirmary, Gryffindor is announced the winner of the House Cup, and Harry celebrates with his friends. 15. Final image, pages 307 to 309. Harry, Hermione, and Ron board the Hogwarts Express train back to London. At the train station, Harry is met by Uncle Vernon, who is as unpleasant as always. However, Harry is a completely different person now. He's not the shy, insecure orphan he was before. He's confident. He has friends. He no longer feels alone. Harry says goodbye to his friends and tells them that he will use magic over the summer to get back at his cousin Dudley, confirming that the tides have finally changed for Harry, and he is a mirror image of the boy we first met. Why is this a superhero? Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone contains all three elements of a successful superhero story. A power. Harry is not only a wizard, but also destined to be one of the greatest wizards of all time. He is the boy who lived, the boy who defeated Voldemort, marking him as something greater than the rest of his kind. A nemesis. Harry has two primary nemeses: Malfoy, his peer nemesis, and Voldemort, his ultimate nemesis. Both are self-made. A curse. Being marked as the boy who lived from such a young age definitely has its drawbacks. As Dumbledore says in the theme-stated beat, Harry was famous before he could even walk. That's a lot for a child to live up to. If you'd like to read an abbreviated version of this beat sheet, check out the Cat's Eye View for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which can be found in the bonus PDF.